Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another show. I have a different guest today, Alex Masters, longtime friend of the channel. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Yes, it's lovely down here in Cornwall.
And you want to build on some other recent streams I've done with David Clues, with a controversial guest Blambus, and various other people on what you're calling the stagnation on the online right. First thing, I appreciate you reaching out across the aisle, Alex, to speak to a man of the sensible center left.
Yes.
I mean, we this is in the spirit of getting out of echo chambers that a leftist and a rightist can have a conversation like this in the modern discourse.
Yeah, I think it's really important that these times of great polarity in our politics, that we can actually, you know, reach across the aisle and find some common ground that we can build and move forwards on.
Excellent. Before we get going, I have to remind everybody that it's still January. That means my January sale is still ongoing. It's promo code SHORJAN. You will be pleased to know, Alex, I'm not going to play the advert because you know, after 20 days of hearing it three times a day, I think everybody's sick of it. I'm sick of it anyway. And that's what when I get really fed up of it, that's the point where I'm like, right, I'm just going to mention it. The crowd are programmed enough. They can play it in their own heads. But before we get going, where can people find you?
Yeah, so people can find me mostly on Twitter, under A2_Masters or Alex, that Steam guy. You can search that. And find me there. I try and keep the posting sort of quite various. So sometimes it's quite serious, sometimes it's fairly analytical. There's usually a nice picture of an old steam engine in there somewhere as well, just to lighten the timeline up a bit. But also try and talk about, you know, doing things in real life, which I think is something we're going to cover quite extensively today.
All right. So stagnation in the online right, you know, from a certain point of view, you know, likes and retweets have never been more up, Alex. Even yours truly had a tweet that had over 40,000 likes the other day. That means my Elon bucks will be up this month, in theory. So what's the problem?
I think it really occurred to me. I know you put out on Twitter a couple of days ago about the general quality of the timeline, I think, is going down. Yeah, the engagement's up. How much of that is bot activity is a separate conversation, which we can part for today. But really, what I see happening is news cycle shortening, responses becoming stock as opposed to meme value. They're now moving to just stock responses. So even that was a cable falling down. Even real people are starting to move into this sort of memetic cycle of responses, and it's really not adding anything to the conversation. We get every new impetus is put through the same filters, it delivers the same answers. We, you know, ramble on about it for 48 hours, we say the same things, the same conclusions, and then we move on to the next thing. And although this generates a lot of activity, it doesn't actually create, it doesn't move anything forward. We still end up in the same position that we were at the start of the week, but with maybe a few more followers on Twitter.
And I mean, again, I'm going to, in all of these conversations, Alex, I try to steel man, you know, so it's not just a case of, I agree, sir. I mean, they might be saying, well, the thing is, Rome wasn't built in a day. You've got to keep on building up those followers. And what's actually happening is you're moving the Overton window. That's what they always say. How do you respond to this?
First of all, I'm not quite as hardline as Scrump, I don't think, on the Overton window not being real. But certainly moving a conversation is all very well and good. But we know Twitter is the smallest of the social media platforms, so you're speaking to a small school of fish in an already realistically small pond. Also, I think we need to mark the anniversary this year. It is 10 years since 2016, although it does feel like we've been in it ever since. Yes, we've become more you know, collective. There are some movers and shakers in this sphere, but really, you know, since 2016, what has our Twitter conversations achieved? You know, immigration went up and then it went down. The deficit got worse and the national debt has got worse. The overburdensome regulation has got worse. Employment laws got worse. Even the potholes have become more extensive. You know, for all our bloviating on Twitter and all our Substack articles, you know, how much has actually changed in the real world? And I think at this 10-year point in the sensible center / dissident right / new right / NRX or whatever it's called this week, we need to sort of take stock of what impact that has actually had in the real world. And I don't think it's been a positive one. I think net we are down on the position that we were in 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of like tangible results that even I may have had in quote unquote in the real world. And there are only really three that I can think of. One is obviously zero seats, which, you know, you could argue, I know this is Scrump's view, that was co-opted for malign ends. And now we're watching T1000 reform in real time with Robert Jenrick going to reform and reform just becoming the Tories again.
Yeah.
Almost as if the Tory party is structurally necessary to the running of the country or something like this. So, you know, my grand vision of just destroying the two-party system by giving the whole piece to Labour and almost like trying to force them to be a sensible government, that just hasn't happened. And now reform are just going to be the Tories again. And we're back to, I mean, it's literally the same people. You know, Liz Truss might be the next one, who knows, but it's just the same people again. So that's only half of one, right? I will say I have seen zero seats, I mean, go around the world. Like, other people have tried to replicate zero seats in other places. And, you know, the symbolic defeat of the Tory party is something that we could say we played a part of, right, in some way. But yeah, okay, so that's half of one. There was the stuff about the community relations service in America that I made a video of and highlighted and worked with some people behind the scenes on. Did a show with Aaron McIntyre, and as far as I saw, that was actually shut down by Trump, which is, I mean, you know, I'm sure its functions have been replicated elsewhere in the system, but at least that was something real, right? This clandestine civil rights kind of whisperer unit was shut down, right? I mean, maybe the Trump admin wanted to do it anyway, and I just helped manufacture consent. Even so, that was something I could point to. And then the only other thing really is I've had a small but significant role, I guess, in promoting Rupert Lowe, and you know, they gave the Dark Lord Blair a temporary setback on digital ID. I mean, it's probably going to be very temporary, given that they're talking about banning social media for under 16, which I actually, as a father, I actually support. I think social media is toxic. I think it's addictive, and I think it's a waste of time as well. You know, the fact is they're going to try to do that through, the only way they're going to be able to do it is through age restriction, which means age verification, which is, again, digital ID through stealth, right? So you're kind of getting there a different way. But still, I mean, those are only the only tangible things I could point to in like 10 years, you know, as well as educating thousands of people in the ways of elite theory and other things. But you know, could have done more, I guess. So I mean, what's the answer, Alex? I mean, you don't need to give all of your plans now, because we're going to talk about that in your ideal vision, what would a non-stagnated quote-unquote online right look like?
I think a non-stagnated right to me actually needs to learn what it has purported to learn in the last 10 years. Some would argue, unfortunately, that means basically saying that all the discussion we've had in the last 10, 15, some would argue even further back, has been essentially rehashing the same ideas. Effectively, it all just comes back to clear them out. I know you've been saying it for a long time. It's a very famous Bowden speech, but the totalizing view of clear them out must be what we condense the last 10 years into and then move forwards. You know, everything within clear them out, nothing outside clear them out, nothing against clear them out. If you are not doing that, if you are just slot posting or reacting, you are not actively moving the conversation towards clear them out. That's got to be sort of left behind now, and we've got to move forwards.
I mean, it's worth remembering what he was talking about in that speech. Okay, when he said clear them out, he wasn't actually talking about Pakistanis in Bradford. Okay, I mean, I'm sure Bowden, you know, knowing what his politics were, would like to clear them out too, right? But the fact is, when he said that, he was talking about the political class, the permanent entrenched political class. Okay, and as we started, we're currently watching that class take over the populist insurgency against that ruling class, reform, and it's literally the same people. Okay, yeah. And Robert Jendrick can make as many speeches as he wants about, oh, the Tories are rotten, you know, the old ruling class have got us in this mess. He is that ruling, like, he personally is that ruling class. And if Michael Gove is behind him, even more so, right? I mean, how many times are we going to fall for it? How many times are people going to fall for it? What I find a little bit frustrating, Alex, is that everybody will say, oh, yes, the Uni Party. Everybody will say, oh, there's no political solution and so on. But then they will not act in that way. They will carry on in some respects thinking that you can actually achieve a political victory through, like, the democratic system. You know, just by, like, I don't know, voting for reform, say. Those people do exist, you know. And what's incredible is that the biggest cheerleaders for reform now are my old nemeses, the Tory boys. The guys who defended Boris and even defended Rishi Sunak and called me everything under the sun, they're now the loudest cheerleaders for Nigel. So it's, I mean, it, when I say it's the same people, it's literally the same people again.
And it goes back to 2016, you know, where you say, oh, what was the big signing before Jenrick, which everybody has already forgotten about, was Nadeem Sahawi, who was a massive figure in the Tory party in about 2016 and then disgraced himself and left. But we're back to, you know, I'm surprised we haven't seen the second coming of Harambe. How many times history keeps repeating itself on this thing. And yeah, people need to learn. I think a lot of it is we are children of our time. We are dyed-in-the-wool liberals. Absolutely every single thing that we've ever encountered has been in this liberal framework. And every now and again, you get that, what if it is? Oh, this time it's no, you have not sufficiently killed the liberal within. When you say there is no democratic solution, there is no political solution, the conversation ends there, and then you have to move to what is the solution. And, you know, obviously when people start talking about revolutionary violence, you have to sort of move away from them, you know, back away slowly. There's a positive social constructive effort that can be done here, which we're not. And we're going to go on to talk about this in a bit, but that's where you see it. And you do, you know, people, they'll come out with a lot of the podcast scene, you know, Pete McCormack's and things like this are, I'm committed, there's no political solution. And then the very next tweet is, have you seen what reform are doing now? It's like, actually, if you do not believe in the political process, why are you interacting with it? Because if you're interacting with it, you're wasting your time on something you have declared does not work. And you've got to be, and you're absolutely right about laser focusing in on the political class. You know, they are arsonists in your house, and they are constantly going, yes, but what about the petrol? Yeah, but what about the matches? Yeah, but what about the flames? You know, no, it's you. You are setting fire to my house.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, again, it's the thing is, if you give over all the energy and focus to them, they then start to rearticulate the same old shit that got us into this. You know, it's about it's like libertarian talking points again. It's we have to go back to Thatcher. It's it's the left, right? The left, all this sort of stuff, and it's like, how are we back here again?
The woke establishment,
the woke establishment, and this is the thing. Unless Farage is going to come out and say, look, my project is to deconstruct the Blairite state. Right, here's my plan to do it. You know, we've pinpointed Communications Act 2003, Supreme Court, Ofcom, all the other dozens of quangos Blair put in to establish the machine as it works now. But I don't hear Farage. Whenever I see him Farage talk, he's talking about smoky bacon crisps and, oh, isn't it great that I've got Robert Jendrick and, Britain is broken and we're going to fix it. But he never, like, it's all just platitudes. Might as well be Boris. You see what I mean? It's like, well, we've heard all this before. 2019 should have been the year. I mean, okay, for my sin, I got behind Boris back in 2019. Okay. That was going on 7 years ago now. Okay. Mm. In what we're saying, in 7 years, we're just like not going to learn and be back to the same thing again. Right. And we have to be, I mean, I think we have to give some people their due, as much as I accuse people of being slot posters and so on. Even people like Carr and Lotus Eaters and so on have not actually embraced Nigel that much. You know, I think partly it's because some of those guys were deselected by Reform. Partly it's the Rupert being on the map as well. But I do think that we should be, in the name of realism, you know, fair to say that not everybody who's online is, you know, full hog pro reform or something like that. And there's not, in fact, I don't really see that much excitement from the guys when it comes to that. I think everybody expects Nigel to betray us, essentially.
It's a bad look on Nigel when we're 3 years out from the general election and already people are sort of admitting they're going to begrudgingly vote for him. Mm-hmm. That's all right at the back end of the general election cycle, when people go, okay, we've seen what everything has to do. I'm going to bite my tongue and I'm going to pull the lever for our Nige. But this far out, and I remember saying to the chaps at the Witan, actually, there were two key points from that, and the first one was any talk of a Labour early general election is bunk. Just completely reject it, because mm-hmm. Labour's only chance is that Reform cock it up before the deadline in 29, and it already mm-hmm. seems like they're doing that. So the Starmer bunker have played an absolute blinder in there, and actually I was saying in all likelihood we might even be getting a second Starmer term, because Reform will basically become the Tories. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to vote for the Tories. That splits a very dismal turnout for the right. Starmer gets a second term. The second bit, which I'm trying to remember now, is...
While you're thinking, Alex, I mean, this is something I want to talk about as well. I don't think I can't remember talking about this. There is also such a thing as, like, generally speaking, I guess, like anti-Starmer slop, okay? Mm. And it's like, well, we know what Starmer is, okay? He is a regime man. He's been put in there to do some job. Quite what that is remains unclear. I mean, we all may have an idea of what it might be. But it's like, how much time and effort has been brought in? Like, it's almost like Groundhog Day with him as well, right? Something happened. Oh, it's definitely over for him now. This is one of the reasons I'm keeping the daily posts about that Egyptian activist going, right? Because there was all that noise and energy about him for one day, one day. Okay. And it was like, well, surely this is it for Starmer now. This is the final. This is the final straw. I mean, he's had about 20 final straws, you know, like attempts to bring the government down, Rayner going, Mandelson going. He hasn't, I mean, he's just still there. Hasn't got, in any normal situation, Rachel Reeves have resigned about five times already. But it's clear they're just not going, it's clear that just they're just going to sit tight until 2029. So it's like, well, okay, we have to recognize that. So, you know, Fleet Street is there. The Daily Mail is there. We don't need to replicate the function of the Daily Mail because they're going to produce all that slop anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Starmer's had so many final straws. I'm surprised number 10 isn't thatched. The second point I was going to say, which is, again, on this sort of level, is that Nigel has been in politics now for 40 years. And it's probably one of the things that we do need to talk about is the time component that everybody forgets. Nigel's been there for 40 years. The number of political friends he has is dismal. You know, in 40 years in politics, you should have connections up the wazoo. And he just doesn't. And he also just has not put the work TM in. I know a lot of people have been saying this, you know, and that's it. Is I'm gonna Blairism's the problem, and even if it's Blairism's the problem, and I want to return to Thatcherism, okay, don't necessarily agree with that, but where's your policy documents? And we've had all this the mumblings about David Starkey and the Great Reform Act and all these things. I've seen nothing, absolutely nothing. And if I was in Nigel's shoes now, you would be right. It's looking on the cards. We're going to get the government in 29. I've now got 3 years to put together a cabinet. Cabinet needs to be about 130 people in total, once you include all the minor things and undersecretaries and all the rest of it. That team needs to be built now. They need to get their policy agendas sorted now so that their policy documentation can be ready to go on day one, which means I need 2 years to write all the policy documents. I need the people who I am putting in those positions being known to the public and the press now. So I need to de facto be running as a shadow government. I haven't got the official titles of the shadow government, but I need de facto a shadow foreign secretary and a shadow home office minister and a shadow secretary of state for defense and a shadow transport minister and all the rest of it. I need all these positions. And then when something comes up, the reform policy on that needs to be ready to go. I need to be doing a pretty decent impression of a guy who's waiting to be in government. And yeah, he's arguing about smoky bacon crisps and nicking Robert Jenrick from the Tories just as is.
Well, you could argue that's what all this is. All the defections is it him putting together his shadow cabinet. The trouble is, it's just the Tories again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just the Tories again with just the same not policies.
Hmm.
Yeah. I half expect in 18 months' time he'll be talking about Rwanda.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're going to do Rwanda, but it's going to work this time. We're going to do it. It's going to be good. No, it's not. And that comes back to a lot of it. You know, you say about Starmer, what's Starmer for? Starmer is the system. And because there's no personalities left in the system, they were all managed out. So he is purely there to conform and enforce the system. And you can see that with the whole Trump and Greenland thing, because an actual man of actual substance, you know, you go, Prime Minister, what are you going to do about Trump and Greenland? I'm going to see him at the WEF and I'm going to punch him in the face and tell him to stop being so bloody stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to see that, but he's going sort of, oh, well, you know, international law and this is unprecedented and all the rest of it. He's an operative. He's not being the executive role, because there aren't any executives, because they all got dismissed because they were mean to their underlings.
So let's move from, you know, frontline politics now to what's been happening in the online space. And one of the things that you could say is that, unlike Trump, who built up a very large online ecosystem, Farage has consistently kept himself at a real distance from online activity, and he prefers to stay in, dare I say, like safe and controlled environments, like GB News basically is like, you know, Reform Broadcast arm, something like this. You know, I mean, I don't know if Farage still has his show on there, but you know what I mean, right? It's like, you know, he'll speak to people on GB News, but he won't. He never embraces the broader online right in the way that Trump and his team always kept that dialogue going. And now, I mean, you can see pros and cons of it, but like JD, but you know, JD Vance is like one Twitter follower away from me, or like he may interact with people, or he's clearly like, you know, read a bit of stuff around the periphery, etc. He's engaged with that world. Whereas Farage always keeps this firewall around Reform to the point where he won't even have people in the party and things like that. And, you know, there have been figures who've tried to insinuate themselves into those circles. Probably the most prominent one is Connor Tomlinson, found himself gatekept out, can sit like doors in the face all the time for him. So he, like, Farage just sent a pretty clear message. We're not having anything to do with anybody. He won't have anything to do with Tommy Lott, probably wise, to be honest. But he also won't have anything to do with anyone. Like, as far as I know, he's never talked to Carl, right? He's never talked to, I mean, and from a certain point of view, this is crazy. These people have lots, hundreds and thousands of followers and views, and, you know, they drive the conversation. He won't have anything to do with them. So if I have a look at where the British right has gone because of that, here they've kind of been firewalled off and they're not allowed to be part of that conversation. I mean, it seems to me that, and tell me if you disagree, some aspect of them has floated off into fantasy land. Not Carl, but, you know, there's Steve Laws, there's Remigration Now, there's, you know, Total Remigration, all these shows with Andrew Gold and so on. And in their mind, they're moving the Overton window. They're exposing the likes of Gold. You know, they're exposing this guy who used to be on the BBC for having liberal views. Okay. And they think that, well, they're moving the conversation. I see something quite different happening personally. I think they are laying the digital breadcrumbs and groundwork for something like what happened in Australia recently, where the entire nationalist network was shut down after Bondi Beach and various other things happened. I think there'll come a moment where the right is discredited by Trump, right? Discredited by Trump. And that even a Prime Minister, Nigel Farage, would fold up and wrap up a lot of the kind of based dissidents that you see everywhere. And Starmer will have laid the legal and digital framework in order to do it, even if it's Nigel who ends up being the one. And it could even be Starmer, as you said. But what I'm saying is the British state at some point will be like, right, all this extremist rhetoric that has been allowed to run, we've got all the evidence we need, we're going to bang all the leaders up, put them in jail, or something like this, or so ban them or something. This is what I see as a real possible danger going forward. And I don't think it's helped by the fact that they're discussing things that anyone with half a brain cell knows is just not realistic. It's just not a realistic plan. Sounds, I mean, to anyone outside of, you know, their Twitter feed, it sounds mental. You know, could play well in comments and things like that, but that's still not real politics in my view. Yeah, what do you think about what the broader British right have been doing as they've been locked out by Farage?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I also think it is actually evidence of how little it's managed to achieve and how little presence it has in the real world is how pure and extreme their views have become. And I don't mean extreme in the negative sense. I mean how far that, you know, they're going to the far end of the conclusions. They're doing that because they are unsullied by reality. Because anybody who does anything in the real world, you know, there's always shades of grey. There's always somebody who just says no because they don't like you. You've always got to make compromises. Mm. You've always got to round the edges off. But because they've polished it up to such a fine point, because they don't use it, because they are purely operating in a theoretical space. I know you've long said, you know, people say we're going to do this. And it's like, well, how are you going to do, you know, what circumstances are there that puts you in power? And they basically come to sort of like World War III or Mad Max. It's like, well, okay, assuming that the Russians don't glass London, how are you going to, in a normal steady state country, how are you going to come to power? And then you get called a, you know, leftist and they block you. It's that sort of thing. You can tell in these spheres the people who actually have an impact, because they are the more mild-mannered ones. They are the ones trying to find compromises. They are the ones trying to pragmatically push things. And are demanding things like, okay, actually, where's your policy documentation? You know, where's this stuff coming from? How are you going to do it? And that's not you being a naysayer. That's actually evidence that you have interacted with the real world.
Mm.
And the fact there's so few people doing this implies that there's a great many people who don't. And that's really sad, because what that means is that the online right is actually exactly where the state wants it. It is online. It is segregated off from reality. It's happily there in Twitter, you know, posting memes to itself. And it also means, yeah, as you rightly say, when they come with the Dark Lord Banhammer and, you know, deal with your extremists, they just go bonk and they'll switch you off and that be it. And because you haven't interacted with the real world, you don't have any lasting impact. It's like you're just switched off and that's it.
I mean, the other thing I think about a lot is that, you know, okay, I've done my bit for today. I ratioed Keir Starmer. I let him know I think he's a pillock or whatever. I called academic agent Brown, right? This sort of stuff. I've done my bit. I've played my part. Now I can, you know, do whatever else I would do today and enjoy my life, because I've done my bit of political activism for the day.
Yes.
And I mean, and this is why I keep on making this point of posting every single day about this Egyptian activist, because in an ironic way, Alex, right, even consistently going on about it every single day is still actually more than what people who said they were angry about that would be like. People talk about I don't know, Greta Thunberg or somebody like this, but the fact they say it every single day, the fact they're very consistent, is still more than the person who just leaves that one hit, like that one comment on one day, and then moves on to the next news cycle. They're kind of autistically stuck in one place. Now, you could say, in fairness to someone like Steve Laws, at least everybody knows what his one policy is, right? They know what that one thing that he stands for, and he repeats it every time he's seen. Just so happens to be something that, you know, it's quite unrealistic, but still, right? He does that one thing well, but most people don't. Most people move from story to story, and the most important thing in the world, El Fatah, January the 1st, completely forgotten about by today. We're recording this on the 21st of January. People are like, well, you're still going on about this. Don't you understand how the news cycle works? Yeah, but this is the whole point. You're constantly caught in this maelstrom of noise and nonsense. And in the Trump era, there's about five nonsenses a day to lose yourself in, to talk about, to give your take on. You know, they call it flooding the zone. Right? There's an active strategy. And meanwhile, nothing's that, like, meanwhile, in British terms, nothing really has happened. Nothing's really changed. This is why I'm keep on saying I want to get the Nokia brick, because the posts, I think Twitter itself has become like a surrogate replacement. I mean, Uncle Ted called it surrogate activity, but it's almost like just like a participation sport where the game is just to leave pointless comments. Right. I mean, and I mean, I have what, like 60,000 followers on Twitter. Okay. Which is some amount of people. And I think most of my posts are fairly pointless. Okay. What if you're like the 10 follower reply guy who's doing like if it's pointless for me, it must be even more pointless for that guy. And yet there he is every day, all day, every day, leaving his little comment to no engagement whatsoever. It's sad. It's sad, isn't it?
Yeah. We need to appreciate the toxicity of catharsis, and it is cathartic. You know, it is, and we do it every single day. You know, you go down first thing in the morning. You know, sit on the loo, waiting for the kettle to boil or whatever it is, scrolling through Twitter. Magically, you've lost another 20 minutes of your day. Just even now, it seems to just scrolling through to find something that is interesting, you know, that's even worthy of you reply guying to, because there's so much crap on there now. This is like late stage drug addiction, you know, where your brain chemistry is so fried and the standard slop is now so diluted that you're trying to find the harder and harder, and people are desperate. You know, I think that's why they do it. This is the thing. This is my hit. This is my one massive injection of catharsis. Starmer is finally going to go, and then he doesn't. And then you've got to go looking somewhere else. It's,
you know, there was a study. Tragic. There's a study being done where they looked at all the different activities that people do and their psychological effects. Okay. And I think like the top rated one that people get like a sense of well-being from, and they genuinely relax, was listening to music. Okay. The bottom one, the most psychologically damaging thing that people do, where, and the word used was hollow. You feel hollow inside. Do you know what it was? Doom scrolling.
Yeah.
Doom scrolling. Doom scrolling is seen as, it makes you feel psychologically hollow while you're doing it. Right. So unlike, I don't know, listening to Wagner or even listening to, dare I say, Madonna, right? I mean, not Madonna, but you know what I mean, right? Unlike listening to your favorite record, which could actually uplift you or at least make you dance or give you a certain mood or whatever, for most people, the act of doom scrolling actually makes you feel worse inside. You know, and maybe like the dopamine hit that you get from engagement or something. I mean, I don't feel anything. Maybe I'm not a normal person, but I don't feel anything. If I suddenly see a tweet has got 10,000 likes or something, it just means nothing to me. I see it as an indictment on me. I'm like, oh shit, that means a ton of random people have found my account. Great. Now I'm going to have to put up with them in my comments. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah,
like I don't really get any enjoyment. So I think it's psychologically bad. But let's just try to go back a bit, okay? So you said they're not doing anything in the real world because they're online. But a lot of people will say, well, hold on now, AA, right? Last year, people put up flags all down their high streets and all up the lampposts and so on. And you were against that as well. You just don't want to do anything. You just want to, you know, why are you against the flag thing, AA? But to me, I mean, I don't really think that achieved much. But do you have a different view? Do you have a more positive view of the flag operation? Operation Raise the Colors, it was called.
It's going to sound really bad, but you almost want to treat the right like you treat a pet, where you don't want to like admonish them for doing things that aren't bad, if that makes sense. So I never wanted to counter signal the raising of the colors. I think it's good. It was good from a sort of raw energy point. It was what it was showing was that there is potential. So there is that there. It's not completely defeated, and it's a sort of build it, they will come. It's nice to know that they are there to come when you build it. So that's what we saw from the flag protest. It was also noticeable round here that it was the Raise the Colours got into like nowhere places. You'd be going past a farm in the back end of Devon and there'd be a Union flag outside. Particularly controversial is if you go over the Tamar into Cornwall and you'd see a St. George's cross. Yeah, you know, I was amazed at that. I thought they'd be torn down and raised with a St. Piran's flag. I think the Cornish Liberation Army would be going after those. But so it was good from that. The problem was it was completely unorganized. And I don't mean that, you know, there weren't Facebook groups or WhatsApp chats and they were all organizing to go out and do specific roundabouts on specific days. It was not pointed at anything. It was not working to an objective. And ultimately, again, it was a surrogate activity. You know, the wind and the rain got to the flags, the council chopped them down, or they just blew off in the storm, or and you've not left a mark on it. Mm-hmm. You know, all the council, ultimately, there's a minute in the council meeting minutes that just says, you know, £10,000 for the disposal of flags. So there wasn't, it showed that there was potential there,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't go anywhere. It wasn't towards anything. So it was heartening in that respect. I think what I think we're going to move to in a bit is talking about building a framework, an actual bricks and mortar exercise to go, right, here's this energy, let's funnel it into a direction towards something ultimately. And I think the last thing I'd say on the flags was what it did is it's a very, very rare example of the online rights commentary space commenting on something the online right is doing. And that is really important. I think that goes back to the stagnation point, which is that there's so little actual stuff happening in the online right that the commentary sphere then gets stuck in the Lotus Eaters boys, absolutely hats off to them, because, you know, just think of the mechanics of like the Lotus Eaters or yourself or something like that. They have to do 3-4 segments every single day, so they need 3 or 4 topics every single day, 5 days a week. So that's 15 things they have to talk about to fill the podcast. Maybe 2 or 3 every month are actually internal to the online right, which then means they have to talk about the slop, they have to react to the government doing stuff, they have to talk about international politics, they have to fill the space. And what the online right needs to be doing is generating the stuff for the content creators to be commenting on.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be how you know it's moving somewhere, because actually you'd be less talking about purple-haired video game characters or sticking flags on lampposts and more talking about actually what has been built and what has been progressed and how we've moved forwards.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would just like to see all of these things attached to tangible policy outcomes. I mean, my favorite bit of political activity has been the farmers, because they were organized, they got a union, there was a tangible policy, they didn't get everything they wanted, right? But they still got Starmer to reduce the tax by 50%. To me, that was a result.
Yeah.
Right, old-fashioned politics. So, you know, part of me wonders if in this country, in a way, to achieve anything, maybe you have to do it through the left, because that's where the unions are. I don't know.
Yeah. The other one, of course, which is even more recent than that, is Rachel Reeves backing down on hospitality business rates.
Yeah, that's also true.
She's backed off the pubs, because again, the pubs have got representation and they've got organisation and they were working to a specific goal and they achieved it.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this is the thing, right? If there was focus, right? Say this Egyptian activist now. I don't really care about that guy. A lot of people did, though, right? A lot of people did. If everybody had have the concerted effort of going on about him for more than the one cycle, and all of the energy that was bound up with, let's say, the flag thing was put towards getting rid of him, as an example, and enough pressure was applied, you could actually have done something if there was focus on it, right? The point is that story was never intended to be more than like a 2-minute outrage. But the possibility is there if only there's focus. Do you understand what I mean? But it takes like concerted effort and pressure and, you know,
the big thing that you did just touch on was, yeah, thinking like a leftist, it takes collective action.
Yes.
Which is the big thing. And again, these spaces, we have not sufficiently killed the libertarian within. Yeah. I'm an individual. I'm going to do my own thing. And it's like, yes. And then individually you will be crushed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, in the interest of time, Alex, right. Let us put a bow on it there. Where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter, A2_masters, name Alex That Steam Guy. I should pop up. Not many people have a name like that. So, yeah, follow me there for the latest updates.
And I'll just remind people, 25% off all courses, promo code SHORJAN up until the end of January. Most importantly of all, friends, get out. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.